one's ever survived a night in the maze.
What happened to him?
Hello! Welcome to episode 32 of Popcorn and Prosecco, as you may very well have noticed. I am your host, Christy Puchko. Perry Nemiroff is off working on Child Eater this week, and so we have our regular co-host, Angie Han.
Hello!
And a special guest host with Eric Wolkowski.
Hi, everybody. I'm very pleased to be here. I don't know why my voice was doing that, but...
Yeah, you sounded
that's
real.
That's just how everyone that. Thinks you sound now, because that's how you
Hi, everybody. yeah, thank you for having me on. I'm pretty stoked. I'm a big fan of this show, so I feel honored to be asked.
Yeah, it's exciting. So Aww. This week, we've got some really weird movies, guys. We've got Tusk, This Is Where I Leave You, and The Maze Runner, and we're going to kick it off with Tusk. Eric, you want to take it?
Sure. Being thrown right into it, which is pretty cool. Yeah, so Tusk is obviously Kevin Smith's new film. It's a departure of sorts for him because it's more horror than anything else he's done. I mean, Red State was a departure too, but Tusk is mostly a move in a different direction. And it's the story about an obnoxious podcaster who travels to Canada in search of a person that he can kind of, it's kind of hard to explain what they do, right? I mean, they talk to weird...
kind of viral video people. Like, those people that, like if you guys remember Afro Ninja, it's that kind of thing where someone was trying to do something cool and embarrass themselves. They go and make fun of them in person.
Yeah, and it becomes viral. And then his thing is that he goes and he interviews them, and then he kind of relates the story to his listeners, and it's a very popular show. It's played by Justin Long, and his co-host is very puffy Haley Joel Osment. I just had to add that.
No, that's true.
But it's sweet. He's still got the sweet Haley Joel face, which is nice. It doesn't work out for him quite the way he expected, and he's sort of waylaid when he's in Canada, and he ends up instead hooking up with an old adventurer, I guess you could call him, named Howard Howe, played by the great Michael Parks. It's a very interesting setup, and if you don't know what the movie's about, you're probably like, where the hell is this going? If you do know what the movie's about, I think that almost adds an element, because you're kind of waiting for the payoff, which, you know, spoiler alert, this guy Howard's obsession is with walruses, and he had an amazing experience with a walrus years ago that he nicknamed Mr. Tusk, and he's kind of hoping to recreate that experience. What he plans on doing, as you would, is transforming his new guest, Justin Long, into a half walrus, half man, which, you know, that makes sense to me.
I like that you introduced that as, like, as you would.
Yeah, as you do, as one does.
I mean, he's not going to find a real walrus to hang out with, so he's got to
do what he's got to do. Which is funny, because he never even seems to attempt that.
Like, it actually kind of seems like it would be easier. Apparently he's very wealthy, so you'd think he could just, like, buy a walrus on the black market and just hang out with it.
Yeah, but there's, like, no effort extended into him just trying to get a walrus, which didn't occur to me watching the movie, but now I'm like, hang on a tick.
Yeah, no,
that's
it's okay.
That would have been a lot less trouble to just get a walrus somewhere.
Because it seems like he has the resources, right? I mean, he's,
he has,
I don't know.
Crazy resources that are never explained.
No. A lot this movie doesn't explain, but, you know, the backstory of this movie is strange because I guess it just started off as, like, a podcast topic on Kevin Smith's podcast, and then they were talking about a walrus man for some reason, and then I guess it was almost like a challenge, like, can we actually make this into a movie?
I think actually what happened was, like, he saw if I'm remembering correctly, he saw, like, a want ad for a guy that said something about, like, I want a roommate that'll dress up in a walrus suit, and, like, it wasn't, like, sinister. I think the person was just joking that they wanted someone who would wear, like, a costume for fun or something. I think. I could
have
done. Anyway.
I like to say, guys, I mean, like, that's the thing. I can see where the humble beginnings of this began, and I came into this nervous because I have not enjoyed a Kevin Smith movie in 14 years. I really liked Dogma when it came out, and since then it's just been a slog for me, honestly. And that's a shame because, like, actually, like, Kevin Smith is one of the filmmakers who got me excited about independent film when I was a teenager. You know, like, I actually really love Chasing Amy. Clerks was a little body for my taste at that age. But, like, you know, I wanted to get back on board with Kevin Smith. But this movie is just so self-indulgent, and, like, at a halfway point, it just becomes a completely different thing than the first half was, and I just started, like, actively loathing it. Which I'll get to, like, when, for me, I was just, like, if, honestly, if we weren't reviewing it for the podcast, and if it were just for me watching it, I would have walked out when one certain character came into it, but we'll get into that.
I don't know, yeah. I mean, I think what you said is correct, like, it feels like two completely different movies that they stitch together, like a, like you would stitch a man into a walrus suit. It just, like, it starts out, it actually starts out feeling pretty good and, like, very different for Kevin Smith, as Eric pointed out. Like, you're just like, oh, wow, this is, like, actually, like, really creepy, and, like, you know, there's, like, this, like, sense of dread that you don't really get from his movies very often. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm with this. I'm excited. And not only that, but the main character is clearly, like, based on Kevin Smith, and he's so, like, overtly obnoxious in the movie, wants you to know he's obnoxious. So I was like, oh, wow, not only that, Kevin Smith is, like, you know, he seems to have, like, a lot of self-awareness here. Like, you know, like, maybe we're going to see this guy go on a journey. Nope. In the second half of the movie has very, like, it continues the same plot, but a lot of the things that they set up in the first half of the movie have nothing to do with the second half of the movie. It just turns into, it goes from being a horror movie into, like, this weird comedy that, in my opinion, doesn't even really work. Like, it's not funny. It's, I don't know.
It's really, it turns really goofy, unfortunately. And it also, it becomes more of a Kevin Smith movie than the first half was. And that's what was kind of refreshing for me about the first half of the movie, was that those scenes between Justin Long and Michael Parks, for me, were really tense. And they're very kind of, like, slow build, you know. There's... Like,
He squanders all, like, the dread and, like, the horror that he built up in the first half with this, like, really goofy, weird second half.
Yeah, and it's got to be said that once the man walrus comes into play, you know, the first image of it is, like, startling because you're like, oh, so that's what it looks like. But after that, it's just, like, you're kind of looking at it, and you're like, wow, this is really silly looking, and it's not scary, it's not weird, it's just, like, kind of goofy.
I also want to, like, and I'm not going to get into the specifics of it, because I don't want to spoil things for people, but, like, the even the movie logic of this makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I'm, like, still not quite sure how it works.
Yeah, it's very confusing, because they introduce all these things, and that's the other thing, the movie introduces a lot of stuff, and then continues to introduce it. Like, they'll tell you, like, this isn't the first person, and, like, you get, like, little hints of that. And, like, the, you know, like, for instance, the flyer he finds has all these numbers already torn off, suggesting other people have done this before. But then they keep hitting you over the head with it, with all these bigger, bigger clues to it. And you're like, well, no, I got that. But the second half, where I just, like, I was surprised, because I thought the whole movie was going to be this kind of insular thing based on, like, the trailers and the poster. I thought it was going to be mostly Justin Long fighting against this guy. But that comes to a head really quickly, basically.
Yeah, the trailer really only shows you, like, the first 45 minutes of the movie.
Which is the best part of the movie. And then it veers off to, like, this female character who is Justin Long's girlfriend and his friend Haley Joel Osment, like, looking for him, which is not an interesting investigation.
No.
And which, worse, those two characters are so barely formed. Their only, like, importance in the plot is that they're friends with him. Like, the girl makes no sense as a character at all. It's just such a bad stereotype. Like, we're going back to, like, Clerks era where, you know, like, she's the girlfriend, but she's also deceitful. It's such a tired archetype, and there's nothing fun with them. And then they add to the plot, what is his name, Guy LaPointe?
Yeah,
Guy LaPointe. They say it, like, just, super French.
It is the biggest French-Canadian stereotype ever, and he has a dumb accent, and he is a super famous actor with a prosthetic nose on and a
really
looks like
bad,
a bad wig. It's terrible.
You can guess who it is just based on that. What actor do we know that loves prosthetic noses and terrible wigs?
Yeah,
I didn't know going in that this actor was in the movie, but I am going to say this. He's in some of the worst movies I've seen this year. Mm-hmm. And when he showed up and I realized who it was, I felt like bamboozled. Like, I was angry that I was like, you're in this movie? And they don't even put him in the end credits. They credit him as Guy LaPointe, and he's going to be in the other two Canadian movies that freaking Kevin Smith is working on.
Yeah, it's really bizarre, too, because it feels like the movie self-destructs, especially with this character. And it's like, what was Kevin Smith thinking? Like, all you would have to do is watch the scenes with this character, with Haley Joel and
Justin.
And then there's a scene with him and Michael Parks, a flashback, that has this really goofy, like, French music playing throughout it. And it's just like, what the fuck?
It goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of
jokes about poutine, but it's like, that's the other thing. It's set in Canada, and the Canada jokes, like, I could write, being an American who's been to Canada for, like, a weekend, where it's like,
they're the laziest Canadian
stereotypes. And a boot.
Yeah.
It's all, like,
they're really nice, and they like hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, those are all the jokes about Canada, and I feel like we should apologize to Canada, because we're just like, I'm sorry, it's 2014, and we're still making these.
Even though, like, most of the movie has nothing to do with Canada, and, like, there's no reason for it to take place in Canada, really. Mm-hmm.
Other than that, Kevin Smith apparently had a bunch of, like, really hacky Canadian jokes laying around that he's like, I must get this into my
artistic vision. Time to get these out there.
Exactly. And, Gila Point is the Jar Jar Binks of this movie. I mean,
That's actually very good. That's true.
That is yes.
And so it drains all the tension from the movie, and when it's over, it's just like, okay, well, that was a failed experiment, you know, fittingly enough. But I still do, like, I would love to do I wouldn't actually do this, but, like, a fan edit of the movie, like how people do fan edits. Mm-hmm. You can do a fan edit of this movie and take out the Gila Point crap and, like, the stupid, most of the second half.
Yeah.
You'd have, like, a tight, interesting, like, hour-long, you know, creepy horror movie. But as
I
it stands...
I put half a movie in here.
Yeah.
There's, like, an interesting body horror setup.
Yeah.
And there's, like, interesting elements, but it's, like, I feel like Kevin Smith, and I feel like this is in part because of the internet culture he chooses to associate, where he basically only pays attention to the people who hold him up and the people that dismiss him, he writes off. Like, yeah. I'm not saying everybody on the internet has a valid point of view, but it's, like, he's become one of those filmmakers that's gotten so far up his own ass that there's just, like, no concept. Like, he just goes so far down these indulgent paths that this whole movie just feels like a jerk-off section.
Yeah, and it's also just like, it's like made for, he makes movies for his fans at this point. You know, he makes movies for people he knows are going to like it no matter what, which is fine if you can do that and you have the resources for it. But for the rest of us, it's like, okay, it would be nice to see like a real movie and you not kind of sabotaging your own movie with like all these goofy asides that are so unnecessary. And I don't know. I mean, it's I walked away from it disappointed, but I still think there's like good stuff in the first half and two good performances. Like I like Justin Long and Michael Parks in it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I was disappointed for the same reason as you. It's just like you're like, you know, as Chrissy said, he makes movies for his fans, but there is a genuinely like different, interesting kind of movie in here, and then he just like can't take it home. So
yeah.
I mean, it was more disappointing to me because I was like, oh, okay, we actually can see how you could be a really interesting filmmaker and, like, do something really exciting.
Yeah.
But then you decide not to go that route. All right, that's cool.
The thing is, there are filmmakers who totally, like, retread the same kind of stuff again and again and again. Like, Buñuel did it. But, like, Buñuel did it in ways that every time it looked really different and was freshly exciting. Like, Kevin Smith doesn't do that for me, where I feel like I grew up and Kevin Smith stayed the same filmmaker. And that's why I almost take it personally when his movies, like, bore me or just don't appeal to me anymore, because he meant so much to me when I was younger and I was so excited to see the daring stuff I thought he was doing, and now it's just, it feels like it's all the same.
Yeah, I'll take this over Zach and Miri though, and Clerks too.
Yeah, I'll give it that.
Yeah
at least he's trying.
Let's move on to This Is Where I Leave You. I don't have a segue. I don't know how to go from body horror walrus movie to a movie about sitting Shiva. So anyway, This Is Where I Leave You. It's based on the Jonathan Tropper novel. Tropper actually wrote the screenplay too, and it's about a family who is kind of far flung, and they have to come together when their dad dies and sit Shiva, which in case you were unfamiliar, is a Jewish tradition where the family gets together for 7 days and they sit in observance and kind of, it's kind of like having a funeral that goes on for 7 days where people can come by the house and be like, I remember your father and da 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 da. But this family does not terribly like each other, so the idea of sitting together for 7 days is incredibly nerve-wracking. And it has Jason Bateman and Tina Fey and Adam Driver and Corey Stoll and lots of other people.
Jane Fonda
is the mom. And it's basically like while they're having these 7 days, it's one of those very movie moments where they take the opportunity to grossly go into all the problems in their life and kind of try to resolve them. And it's, you know, it's a very movie thing, but it's actually, that's how the book was. So it makes sense on that level. But yeah, it's like, for instance, Jason Bateman's wife at the beginning of the movie, the very first thing that happens is his wife cheats on him with his boss. And so now he's homeless and he's jobless and he's wifeless and he has to go home and deal with the death of his father. And like every member of the family has something they're dealing with, whether it be a May-December romance that probably is not going to work, or like a couple trying to get pregnant, or a woman who realizes that maybe she married the wrong guy. Like these are all things they deal with. And it's a movie that's kind of jam-packed with plot lines, but to its credit, because you like these characters. It doesn't really need to establish too much because you already know these actors. Like Jason Bateman's kind of playing a Michael Bluth character. Tina Fey's kind of playing a Liz Lemon character. Adam Driver is basically playing Adam from Girls with a slight little notch different in a different direction. And because of that, it makes it really easy to dive in and just ride these rides of all these many different plot lines. And I, having read the book, I think the book is more transgressive and does some more shocking things that the movie didn't even attempt to do.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, it's exactly that. The changes they made to the movie, I'm in no way surprised that they made.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good movie. It goes down smooth. There's, like, not really that much substance to it. I think when I left the movie, I kind of left feeling like, you know, it's, like, it's a dramedy. It's not that funny. It's, like, not that sad. It's, you know, I think that what you've said about, like, you know, how much you like these actors, like, that account, like, the movie coasts so much on the fact that you already like these actors. And, like, you know, I see Tina Fey, I automatically am interested in, like, what's happening to her, and, like, I want what's best for her because it's Tina Fey, not because the character is particularly well-written. But, like, all that said, I mean, it's, like, it's a mild pleasure that goes down easy. It's, like, something that in a year is going to be playing on HBO on repeat, and I'm probably going to watch it like 3 more times just because it's rainy outside and I have nothing better to do.
Yeah, I think the way I thought of it was that it's cinematic comfort food, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what kind of movie this is, and it doesn't deviate from that path at all. I mean, every character, as you mentioned, is like tailor-made for the actor. And you have all these archetypes. I mean, he's like, you know, the Jason Bateman character says, like, at least a dozen times, you know, like, I've tried to follow the straight path, and look at where it's got me.
It's not subtle about what the themes are.
And there are all these, like, platitudes like that, and, like, you know, like, tagline-ready stuff, like, sometimes life isn't what you expect it to be, or, like, something along those lines.
Possibilities. Like, yeah, there's a lot of spoken tags.
Yeah, and it's all stuff that's just, like, you could, you know, easily, like, a Hallmark card it. So then you have the jerky, irresponsible brother, you have the uptight one, you have, you know, the mom who's trying to get everybody together. Nothing groundbreaking in the slightest, but yeah, I mean, you know what you're getting into. The actors are all likable. It's a good cast.
It actually feels like an R-rated Nora Ephron movie.
Yeah, it definitely has that kind of thing, or like a James L. Brooks. And you know, everybody kind of cries together. They're, you know, millions of scenes of two characters, you know, consoling each other and going, you know, remember that time we did this? And oh yeah, I don't actually dislike you. I actually love you. You're my brother. just like that times 10. But again, if you like that kind of movie, then this is totally up your alley. And it coasts along on the likability of its characters. And, you know, there's a handful of funny scenes, but I think, as Angie said, it's never really funny or really sad. It's kind of like middle of the road.
But it's thoroughly entertaining. Like, I was entertained through the whole thing. I would never zoned out or was, you know, thinking about
it. Pleasant is the word that I would choose for it. Is it like remarkable? No. Is it, like, amazing? No. It's pleasant.
It doesn't ask too much from its audience, and it delivers exactly what they're expecting. So, you know, that's pretty much it.
It's a movie to watch with your mom so that you can hug afterwards and get ice cream.
Yeah,
that's
funny.
I actually texted my mother-in-law and my mom afterwards and was like, you should see This Is Where I Leave You. You like it.
Yeah, mom movie.
It's a mom movie, yeah, because it's like a little racy, but just a little.
Yeah, a little naughty, like naughty moments that you could
naughty
put in a trailer.
Naughty is literally the word I used in my review. Yeah. Like, it's a little naughty.
But never too bad.
Yeah, it's like there's some sex, but most of it's off screen.
And there's
it's
even
really
a cute little kid.
Never too anything. It's...
Yeah, there's a pooping child, so that's...
pooping child. I think that was how he was billed, too.
That's like the only contribution he has to the movie is he goes around and poops. Like, that's literally all he does.
It's there's literally a character in here, a very small child who just goes around carrying his, like, potty training, like, fake toilet thing, and he just, like, sits down anywhere and just starts pooping. It happens, like, 8 times in the movie.
And there's an amazing moment where Jason Bateman is watching this happen, and it's, like, a serious moment, like, zooming in on Jason Bateman's face as he's, like, getting life lessons out of
the
simplicity of the child pooping.
That's why I turned to Angie, and I was like, that kid gets it. Because I feel like that's what the moment is saying, like, this kid knows what's important. What's better than pooping outdoors?
The simplicity of just pooping in your own portable toilet, like, that's what it's all about, man.
Yeah, and then just so you're not, just in case you weren't clear, later, I think they say something about, like, oh, that kid who poops everywhere is, like, the happiest person
yes,
in the family.
They actually do. That's right. Oh, God.
You know, you didn't understand it the first 8 times it happened, that's so, funny. You know, they have to tell you. It's that kind of movie. But
yeah. I have to say, the one thing that I enjoyed more out of it, and, like, Tina Fey is really fun in this movie. Jason Bateman does his Jason Bateman thing. It's fine. And there's, like, a lot of good supporting turns. Like, Rose Byrne's great, but you wish she had more to do kind of thing. Adam Driver runs away with this movie.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He's really good.
Like, every time he's in it, it feels like he's from a, like, slightly better movie with, like, a little bit more originality and creativity and energy. Yeah.
It's because, like, everybody else is, like, I tried to explain in my Cinema Blend review, it's like everybody else is kind of working within this idea of, like, this is how a broad dramedy goes, and, like, they play these safe beats, and then he comes in with his kind of wild elbows and things, and it's just a very different energy.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. He brings all the energy, I think, and every scene with him has a little more spark than, you know. But yeah, I mean, I like him in general, and he definitely doesn't disappoint here. If you're a big Adam Driver fan, then this is the movie for you, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's, and I think, like, it'll be exciting because it'll introduce people who don't watch Girls to who Adam Driver is ahead of Star Wars.
Right.
And they'll be like, what the hell is this guy doing in Star Wars? Because it's a movie where Yeah, you're just like, you really get his weird energy, and you are just like, huh. Like,
yeah. Like, I've seen him just be, like, a soldier in Lincoln, and I know he can tone that down, but I hope in Star Wars he gets to be this Adam Driver, where it's just elbows.
I hope he gets to scoop up, like, a beautiful Darth something in his arms and run off with it like he does in, like, so many of the other things he's in. That would be amazing.
If he full-on calls anybody kid in Star Wars, I'll shriek like a fangirl. I won't be able to handle that.
That'll be weird.
Yeah.
And now this review has devolved into Adam Driver, Star Wars, This Is Where I Leave You fan fiction, so maybe it's time to move on.
That'd be interesting.
The next thing is actually me. It's on me to explain it to you. All right, so the last thing we're going to cover this week is The Maze Runner, which is another dystopian YA teen drama. It's like the 10th one this year. But this one stars Dylan O'Brien from Teen Wolf, and he wakes up in a maze, which he's later going to run, because it's right there in the title. But yeah, basically he wakes up in this, like, big, like, green, you know, open green area, and it's, like, surrounded by a maze, and he doesn't know, like, he doesn't remember anything about his past, or who he's there, or who sent him. There's all these other guys that live here, like, all of them kind of, you know, male teenagers, and none of them know why they're there, or, like, how they got sent there, or, like, how to get out. Most of them don't remember anything about the past. So then the movie is, like, them trying to figure out, like, what are we doing here? How do we get out of here? Et cetera, et cetera. Let's run the maze, because, you know, Maze Runner. So this movie kind of had good and bad for me. The actual maze running is pretty good. Like, the action scenes that involve maze running are, like, they actually, like, the action genuinely feels desperate in a way that I don't think a lot of other action movies get across. Because, you know, usually when you watch an action movie, you're just like, oh, but you'll be fine. You're the hero. Like, something about the way that this was shot, it really feels, like, desperate, which I loved. And it's, you know, even though I was complaining that it's another dystopian drama, it's a premise that feels a little bit different because, you know, one's, like, it's not like Katniss wakes up in the Hunger Games and is like, what the fuck am I doing here, you know? So I thought it had potential, but a couple of big things sank the film for me. One of them is the main character, who is awful. So awful. It's just... The way I really want to describe this movie is, let me tell you a story about another white guy who walks into a society that he doesn't know anything about and immediately takes charge and starts telling people what to do. It drove me nuts. He's the most boring character. His only trait is that he's like, you know how every, like, there's always, like, that hero who always wants to just, like, dive headfirst into things, and there people are like, I don't know if he's foolish or brave, but because he's a protagonist, obviously he's brave. That's this guy in a nutshell. It's the only quality he has. Literally all the supporting characters, well, okay, maybe except for one, are better than him. Yeah. I don't know. So that was the other problem I had with it was the ending, but we'll get to that a bit later. What'd you guys think?
So I also took issue with the main hero, mainly because it seems like they take for granted that we're just supposed to be like, oh, he's the handsome, attractive white kid, so we're just going to go with him and side with him. And it's like, the thing is, though, like, he shows up in this world and immediately is told these are the rules of the world, and he's like, but why? And it was like, hang on a second, you don't know anything about yourself except your name. Why are you so defiant? And then, like,
this is a guy so, like, ill-prepared for this world that they're like, go get some fertilizer. He's like, that's clearly in the forest. And that then he gets confusing. Lost in the forest. That's like actually happens in the movie.
But like, it was this kind of thing where it plays on the trope of like literally being like, this kid looks like a hero, so the audience will side with him. It's funny because it does what This Is What We'll Leave You, This Is Where We'll Leave You does, where it's like, you know these actors and these types of people, so just go with it. But in this, it's kind of insulting because they're asking a lot more of us, where they're like, here's this kid who clearly looks the hero part, and so just go with the fact that he says he's a hero. But it's like, realistically, he's upending the civilization that these teenage boys worked really hard to create, and he's doing it with, like, no clear plan, no clear solution, and just, like, I mean, he's entering into an issue without an exit strategy. And then, like, his enemy is supposed to be this kid named Gally, who, like, is afraid of change for understandable reasons. He literally remembers nothing about his life except for the 3 years he spent here. And at one point in the movie, Gally says to him, you're trying to change everything. You've only been here 3 days. I've been here 3 years. And I was like, it's only been 3 days? Like, he has every reason to be suspicious of this kid.
I mean, like, imagine if someone waltzed into your city and is like, I'm the mayor now. I'm going to change every rule we've ever had. And you're just like, but I liked my life. It was fine. Like, it wasn't perfect, but who the fuck are you to tell me that? And that's what it feels like. And I agree with you.
He does things that don't just risk him. The things he does automatically risk everybody else.
Yes.
And he just doesn't give a shit.
And, like, well, and they also have repercussions too. Like, there are repercussions for his transgressions, and he gets people killed. And even at the end, he still has like his little cult of followers, and it's like, really? Like, at this point, I'd be like, dude.
Retroactively sort of explain why he is the way he is, but it's like, from the start, assume we haven't read the book, which I didn't. I have no reason to trust this kid. And by the end of the time, I still didn't really get it because the way they tried to retroactively explain everything didn't work for me. So, and what makes it even more, like, disturbing is that he comes into this town where, like, people in power, there's, like, a black kid who's in power, Albie, who runs everything, and he very quickly kind of usurps Albie, and then the main maze runner, Minnow,
is his boss, essentially.
Yeah, there's, like, two kids who are, like, people of color. There's a black kid named Albie and an Asian kid named Minnow. And he, like, quickly usurps them, apparently within 3 days, and everybody's just fine with it. And it doesn't make sense plot-wise, and then if you're looking at it, like, from the aspect of casting, it's uncomfortable. That basically the thing is, like, well, he's a natural-born leader. He also happens to be a white kid.
Yeah, of course. You gotta follow the white kid. I mean, there are plenty of white kids there already, but, I mean, they're kind of useless and in the background.
But none of them look traditionally...
Well, they're not as handsome as Dylan O'Brien. They look like...
It was
he's
so
Thomas Brody Sangster, who was not as
I mean, he's just a very bland looking person. Like, I mean, I told you guys yesterday I thought he was Logan Lerman for at least half the movie. I was like, is this Logan Lerman? Is this what Logan Lerman looks like? And then I was like, no, but he's like from the same, like, fat, you know, the copy
There's
machine.
Like a cookie cutter that churns out Dylan O'Brien's and Asa Butterfield's and Logan Lerman's, and they just, I mean, they might be fine actors, but the thing is, like, it's just such a set type. Of this is what
I think the movie does a disservice to Dylan O'Brien. Granted, I don't know him that well. I don't follow Teen Wolf or anything, but I've seen like a couple episodes, and he was in like the internship and whatnot. I've seen him around. He's actually like pretty charismatic. He's got a good sense of humor. The movie makes no use of any of that. It gives him the most like, you know, flattest stock hero character ever. Gives him no personality. So, you know, I'm just trying to say, this isn't really Dylan O'Brien.
Aside from being headstrong and, I guess, like, intelligent, what are his characteristics? Like, there's nothing for us to
think. He also runs really fast, especially inside mazes.
That's true.
That's a good attribute.
And, like, you guys didn't even mention sacrificing, but even that, I don't know.
He doesn't even mention the girl. There's actually a girl in this movie that shows up.
Oh, yeah, so after...
But she does just show up.
So, like... Well, so, okay, so in the movie, basically, like, every month, like, another kid comes up who has no memory and has no idea who it is. It's always a teenage boy, and then one day they get a girl who is played by Kaia Scodelario, I think that's how you say her name, and she, there's a note in her hand that says, she's the last one ever. And everyone's like, what does that mean? And I'm like, it means she's the last one ever. Like, it's literally spelled out. They're very dumb, these people. And, you know, so part of the mystery is like, but why is she here? Do they solve it? No, they don't explain why it's all dudes and then one day a girl shows up. It's just a thing that happens. It's very strange.
And I gotta say, I mean, you know it's PG-13, but these dudes don't act like dudes would if a girl showed up after there's just like 100 dudes there.
And for 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, guys. I mean, you'd be they're just like, oh, she stinks. You know, get her out of here. I mean,
why is there a girl here?
Yeah, it's
there
more
would
like
be
that.
Some
like,
slightly girl. More gendered politics in play, and here there's not. And part of it is because she arrives in the plot at a point where things are already moving so fast that they don't really have time to like stop and establish that, I guess. But it does seem very like odd, and the fact that no one ever deals with it at all, you know, makes the world feel even more like kind of half-formed and like bland and like.
And what's really frustrating is that, like, they had an interesting concept, but then we were talking about, and I don't want to get into the specifics of the ending, but I feel like we can talk about, there was a clean point where the film could have ended, and it would have felt like an interesting, complete film. Instead, it continues past that to do that sequelitis bullshit where it's like, here's where the next movie could go. And it just
Phase
makes
two.
Everything really confusing where I'm like, I genuinely don't understand what this movie was about now.
And also, it like, at least the movie, for most of its running time, is something different than, like, Divergent or Dystopian Future. Even though you know it's in that genre, it's still mm-hmm. kind of different. But the ending opens it up into, oh, it is just another one of those movies. It is just going to be, like, you know, the same crap we've seen before. And, frankly, like, I don't care about a sequel, and I don't care to even research, like, what the hell is actually going on. Yeah, I think the scenes in the maze early on are definitely the most gripping, and as Angie pointed out, they're pretty well done. But for the most of the running time, it's very repetitive. It's very kind of just blah, 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 blah. The girl is complete, like, I mean, she's from the Kristen Stewart factory, which is, like, why would you go to that factory?
Really good in, Wuthering Heights. She's amazing.
She's good in Skins, too. It's another good actor, kind of like Dylan O'Brien, where it's, like, they have the potential to be really charismatic and interesting, but the script gives them nothing to work with at all. There are no opportunities for them to show a glimmer of personality.
And as Angie pointed out after we saw the film, like, I did enjoy watching this movie. Like, I enjoyed it a little less than I did Ender's Game last year, which I enjoyed. Like, I, you know, for me, this would be a fun Saturday afternoon movie. But, like, when you're actually picking it apart, a lot of it has problems. But, like, I would have enjoyed this movie more if we had followed literally any other character. Because Thomas is a snooze.
Yeah, he's a bore. And there's no humor to him, and there's really no humor to the movie at all.
Personality to him.
Yeah, it's very kind of bland.
And even like the way the movie looks and like, you know, the set design and the costume design, it looks exactly what you would think. Like if I didn't tell you anything about what it looked like and I was just like, just imagine a dystopian future filled with, you know, teenage boys and they're in this like big setting. It looks
and
exactly
as Andrew pointed
like,
out, you know everyone, it's a dystopian future when boys are wearing Henleys.
They're all wearing Henleys.
They're all wearing
like,
that same
they're all wearing earth-toned Henleys and you're just like, of course you are. Just,
yeah.
Of course you are.
Fine. Yeah.
What else would you be wearing?
Whoever their oppressors are went to Old Navy first and gave them some fashionable duds.
I feel like he got a really good deal at Old Navy, like 100 Henleys for $50 or something, because everyone's wearing like very similar clothing.
In a dystopian world, you know, Old Navy is a very affordable outlet still.
Oh, can we talk about the exposition? Every scene, he goes, so what's that? And they go, we call them the Reavers. And he's like, what's that?
Grievers.
We call those the Blades.
Yeah.
What's that? We call that. Like, there's a million we call that, and they all have these, like, weird nicknames, and it's just like, okay, like, just call it what it is. We don't need, like, a fancy nickname for every damn thing. Like, we call it the grass.
Yeah, they do that for things where you're like the Blades and the Glade. Like, we could have figured out contextually. We don't need names for that.
We call it the Changing. That was my favorite one. There's this thing where.
Yeah, it's called the Changing because the guy is changing.
Yeah.
It feels like checklists from the book. Like, we have to mention these things or the fans will be really upset. But it's like they're not mentioned in an organic way. It's like, make sure we mention this word. Like,
yeah. And then on top of that, sometimes a character, like, kind of figures something out, and they're like, but it doesn't matter. And I'm like, yes, it does! Like, at one point, they unlock, like, a really key part of, like, Thomas's mystery.
Big part of his mystery.
And then they're like, and then the other characters, you know, who's like, but it doesn't matter. And he's like, no, you're right, it doesn't. And I'm like, I thought the whole point was we were trying to figure this out. Why does it not matter all of a sudden? That doesn't make any fucking sense. And it's because the movie doesn't feel like dwelling on this plot point, even though it's a major plot point, and even though anyone in this situation would be like, holy shit, hold up, let's go back to this thing which super matters.
But instead the movie goes, but never mind, guys, let's just keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, I was not a big fan, I must say.
I mean, it's not, like, the worst thing I've seen. It's not offensively bad. It's just kind of there. But it's not, like...
these three movies, if someone's going to the theater this weekend and their options
this
are...
This is where I leave you. This...
Eric?
I would say... I guess I would go with that one because it's the most easily digestible. But,
Or watch Tusk and then walk out right after you see the Walrus Man reveal for the first time and you'll have seen a pretty good movie.
Be like, wow, that was a wild movie. I can't believe it ended that way.
Yeah. That's funny. That's actually, I feel like that's true of this movie, too, where it's like, if they had just ended it sooner, it would have been...
So, okay, watch This Is Where I Leave You, but if you're going to watch one of the other ones, make sure you walk out at exactly the right time. In Tusk, it's after they reveal the Walrus Man. In Maze Runner, you'll know it. You'll get to an ending where, like, there's a big climactic, like, you know, action sequence, and then there'll be an ending, and you're just like, the movie seems like it's about to end. Just stand up. Walk out. It'll be a better movie.
Yeah, because it keeps going and going. The coda lasts, like, 20 extra minutes. You're like, all right, already enough.
Yeah. So,
let's sigh. But, I mean, overall, it's not a terrible week of the movies. It's just not a very exciting
week. It's like that time we had to see November Man. It's fine.
Yeah. It's not November Man.
I'll just add, See Walk Among the Tombstones. We didn't talk about that, but that's a really good movie. And that's coming out this week. Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's everything for this week. That was exciting.
Yeah.
So we'll be back next week. We'll have all new movies to review. Eric, thank you so much for being on the show. You want to tell everybody where they can read about you on the interwebs?
Sure, I'm on joblow.com, and I'm on Twitter, at Eric Walkuski, and it was a pleasure, and I hope to come back soon. Maybe some better movies next time, guys. Come on.
Aw, yeah, we're sorry. It's like your fault that you saw a couple of these, I think, so.
Yeah, don't invite me back. No September movies. I want, like, November and December movies, okay, guys?
We'll see what we can do.
Thank you, though. It was fun.
Angie, where can we find you on the internet?
I write for slashfilm.com, and you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN.
And I'm at Christy Puchko, that's KRISTYPUCHKO on Twitter, and you can find highlights of my work at decadentcriminals.com. And as ever, you can find more episodes of Popcorn and Prosecco on our Popcorn and Prosecco YouTube channel. We also have two different feeds on iTunes, so you can download the video cast or just the audio version on iTunes. Please subscribe, and please rank and rate us. And we also have popcornprosecco.com. And the Twitter account, at Popcorn Prosecco. There's lots of ways to catch up with us. So do that and let us know what you want to see coming up and what you want us to review.
Cool. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks for having coming in. And we'll see you guys all next week at the movies.
This is a Valentine to my fan base.